Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Breitall. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review.
This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 294 for comics originally released on March 27th, 2013. Now, starting us off in DC is iVampire number 18. Now, this is the penultimate issue of the series. I think when we picked it, we might have been thinking it was the final issue.
I believe that was what we were thinking, but we got the second to the last issue here instead.
This is something that is written, I think, and given the title's about the end, kind of makes sense. Very much kind of for that longer story. It's very much a middle chapter of something. I think somebody coming in at this point going to be completely lost, which, again, kind of understandable. And this, for all intents and purposes, essentially one big, long, extended fight scene between Kane and Andrew Bennett with, you know, a lot of other people involved. And I don't think they did a great job kind of resetting the scene at the beginning of this issue, because I was having a little bit of a hard time kind of placing exactly where things had left off. Now, I'll admit, out of the new 52 titles, you know, if I had to rank them as to, you know, favorites, least favorites, or whatever, this would not be at the top of the list. This would be closer to the bottom. It's more I'm getting it because I'm curious what's going on than that I love these characters or something. And this wasn't a bad issue, but I came out of this feeling that there was kind of a look at this, and this, and this, and just kind of a almost chaotic aspect to this of, you know, let me raise the stakes, let me wow you and stuff, versus actually impressing me with a really solid story. Not to say it wasn't a solid story, but I felt there was more splash, noise and circumstance and stuff that almost got in the way of the story for me. I mean, what were your thoughts?
I didn't feel exactly that way, although I can understand. I think you're more in the sweet spot of DC readers, and that's probably one of the reasons why this title is ending. I don't think this title is really resonating with the standard DC audience.
Mm-hmm.
I've been liking, in fact, this is one of my, you know, probably top five DC titles that I read. So, you know, but that's just my tastes tend more towards not the standard, you know, DC stuff. I find that, you know, I like some of these weird, you know, titles, this and Demon Knights and, you know, a couple others that are my favorites are not high on the sales charts. And a lot of the ones that are the top sellers for DC, you know, are, you know, in my bottom 10 of, mm-hmm. of favorites. I agree with you, though. This is a middle chapter, but, you know, given that it's the second to the last issue of a series and, you know, the story has been building, I wouldn't recommend that anybody, you know, jump in at this point, although I've really enjoyed the series as a whole. I think Josh Fialkov has, he's done certain things over the course of the series that I don't want to spoil, you know, for people, but, you know, he's made it, you know, he does that same thing that a lot of writers do. He makes it seem like it's going to be one way, and then he switches it up a couple of issues later, and he makes it something different and interesting. And he's kept my interest through. I actually dropped the series for a couple of issues and then picked it back up and went back and got those intervening issues. You know, I'm like, how could he have done this? And, you know, he just faked me out. So I've enjoyed the series, and they've changed the artist. I don't remember if it was this issue or the previous one, but Fernando Blanco, I think, is similar enough to Andrea Sorrentino, who started this series out and did most of the issues. There's not a major stylistic difference. I think that it feels similar enough that I don't feel like, you know, if they had put, like, I don't know, Humberto Ramos on the series or something. And, you know how sometimes they switch artists and the style is so different, you feel a real jarring, you know, just change in it. And, you know, like on Daredevil, when they have the rotating artists there, those artists have complementary enough styles that it's not a jarring difference when you have the different artists between Samney and Marcos Martin and Pablo Marcos. And, you know, they have managed to pick complementary sets of artists there. This is another one. I think that Fernando Blanco has gone on from Andrea Sorrentino in a good fashion. I like this series overall, and I'm really going to be curious to see how Fialkov ends this off and whether he's going to have a kind of definitive ending for it for now that'll be, you know, at some point in the future, someone can write a story to bring these characters back, or if, you know, he kind of just puts an end cap on it for now.
Yeah. I'm almost suspecting that some of this is going to kind of bleed over into Justice League Dark or the Constantine series, you know, because those are the other things. I mean, both the House of Mystery is involved here, John Constantine guest stars here, and if there are plot points that want or need to continue or whatever, those would be logical places for them to show up.
Yeah, I'd almost rather that it just end than to have some other writer monkey, you know, just kind of leave it sit for a while, you know. That's my preference. Just handy, in my opinion, to kind of have the kind of end to it.
No, I agree. That'd be the smarter move. I'm just saying, if they've got other things where big picture-wise for the meta arc for the DC Universe, they need, you know, the vampire storyline to continue or whatever, there are logical places they could do it, and it wouldn't seem too, you know, forced into that.
Yes.
You know, I certainly don't want to see what happened when some of the earlier titles ended and those storylines almost picked up without missing a beat in other titles. It's like, well, right. Wait a sec, you know, do we really need, you know, Voodoo suddenly showing up over in Grifter or wherever it was and stuff like that? That didn't work too well.
No, I agree with you on that.
One of the things on the art that I did like about this that's different from the earlier art in the series is at times I felt a lot of the stuff was getting kind of lost in the blacks or whatever. It was just a very dark, silhouetted comic at times, and I didn't feel that way at all in this issue. You know, mm-hmm. Certainly there were some shadows and a few places like that where it made sense and were well used, but I didn't feel like I was wanting them to kind of crank up the lights during the entire story.
Yeah, that's true. But it has still that similar kind of feel to it.
Yeah, yeah. Again, fits the same basic style, but some of the things I didn't like about the style, right. They've kind of, you know, gotten around, I guess. So for me, this was an average comic. It wasn't bad, wasn't great. For me, you know, 3 out of 5.
I give it a 4. And I've really enjoyed this series. I think I'm kind of sad to see it go because it was kind of a breath of fresh air to me in the DC universe. But I think a lot of the people, you know, it's not really what they're looking for in DC books.
I would pretty much agree with that. I think it's more Vertigo-ish than they want, and the people who wanted the hardcore Vertigo stuff, it's less Vertigo than they want.
That's true. And, you know, that's the thing. You're seeing a lot of these books are treading a line, you know, where it's, well, it's not, you know, like you say, it's neither fish nor fowl. It's not enough of the one thing, and, you know, it's not enough of the other thing, and it just kind of lives in this weird limbo zone in between.
Well, by trying to please everybody, they're almost pleasing nobody.
Yeah.
Shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Sure. So we've got Guardians of the Galaxy #1. Now, we talked about the .1 issue of this that was more of a Star-Lord origin story, more of a Star-Lord, well, I wouldn't say more of it, was pretty much exclusively a Star Wars Star-Lord story, whereas now we're seeing the Guardians of the Galaxy team, although Star-Lord is still a central figure in this story. I got the feeling, even though we didn't have a lot of the rest of the team, it just had that Guardians of the Galaxy feel to it.
Yeah, well, I mean, they showed up in the later half of the book and stuff.
Right.
Early on, it was very much Star-Lord and his dad, who apparently is king of the Spartax planetary system. I don't know quite what that is, but it sure sounds impressive. I thought it was kind of funny when his dad's like, you gotta stay away from Earth. It's no man's land. No aliens can go there now. And I'm like, wow, Earth is kind of off limits intergalactically now. That's a major turnaround from just a couple of years back when it was like the dumping ground for all the alien criminals. It was back in the Maximum Security storyline about a decade ago and stuff, where it's like, ah, we got villains, let's just dump them on Earth, who the hell cares? So, I mean, interesting to see that twist, if that is indeed kind of what's really going on. The whole Council of Galactic Empires, we've seen, you know, similar sorts of things before, not quite exactly like this or whatever, but it gives it a a bit of a political feel that I think previous Guardians storylines were kind of missing, and I think would be a good addition to it.
Yes, I agree. How did you feel about Iron Man in this issue?
Well, I thought we got a really good opening splash with him, you know, at the middle there, full page, that I'm sure will go for decent bucks on the back, or the original art market, despite the ugly armor. I thought it was incredibly convenient for the Guardians to show up when they did. I mean, the timing just felt off, because he's there, suddenly aliens attack, suddenly the Guardians are there. It's like, wow, that's convenient. And the timing also felt wrong, and so much of this really would have fit better between the current Iron Man volume and the previous one, at the end of which, when Tony went out into space. If I had read that issue, I'm going to go out in space and go vacation for a bit, and then read this, I'm like, wow, this fits, this is good, this makes sense. But he's already back on Earth, he's doing other stuff, he's had a story arc or two in his own book, now he's here, it's confusing, it's like, come on. The timeline, for some people, is not an issue at all. For me, it just shows they can't get their ducks in a row. It seems unprofessional in a planning aspect of the Marvel Universe.
I completely agree with you on the timing aspect. I just, you know, in addition to that, I didn't care for what felt like shoehorning Iron Man into the series.
It would have been a hard fit to get Wolverine or Spider-Man in here.
Well, any of those. I mean, just like, you know, and I think they're doing it because they want to have some mainstream Marvel character in there, but I would have just preferred if they would have just stuck with the, you know, the core team with Star-Lord, Groot, Rocket, Gamora, Drax, and maybe, you know, Nova would have made sense. You know, at least he's a space hero. Or
if they'd done Nova or even Quasar or some of the other ones
Quasar.
That had been big in the past but not now, we'd be seeing a series that lasts maybe 12 issues. Now, with Bendis doing it, with McNiven on the art, with Iron Man in the book, this may actually last longer than that. So, I mean, I agree with you. I think he's forced into this for blatant marketing and, you know, sales reasons and stuff. It's at least an almost understandable character to put in the group. It just seems like he's overexposed by being on, like, half the Avenger teams and stuff on Earth right now. The other thing that got me was...
How long do you think he's going to stay in the book, though? I mean...
Depends how long they want the book to stay around.
So basically you think if once they take the major Marvel character out of this book, it's only a matter of time until it's doomed.
Unless they put a more major Marvel character in there. Unless they can find a way to fit, you know, Wolverine in here. Or I'm trying to think who else would be a really good example. Actually, Captain America would be kind of funny.
Well, he's running around in Dimension Z. Maybe he can come out of Dimension Z in space or something.
Well, I was thinking more in terms of just the Vance Astro connection to the previous Guardians of the Galaxy. Yeah. You know, we've had a guy with the shield leading the team before. As much as I would like to think that these characters are very viable in and of themselves, I think we've got a fairly good track record with the Marvel Cosmic stuff where it's got limited appeal. And it's a shame because they're doing some fun stuff with it. Abnett and Lanning did great work. The stuff here is a lot of fun. But it's not what I think the average Marvel reader's interested in for the most part. You know? For good or bad.
And, yeah, I guess that's an interesting point. I can't disagree with you, but it's just... It's too bad.
Oh, yeah. It's a real shame. There's a couple of things that Marvel's come out with, the DC's come out with, that other publishers come out with, but just... wrong title, wrong time, or whatever, and it just didn't catch on, despite in some cases it being really good stuff. And it really saddens me when that happens, because some titles, I think, just get lucky for when they hit the market, and they click at just the right time, whereas that exact same property a year earlier or a year later would have just kind of fizzled. And in other words, it's not... comics are certainly not a meritocracy by any stretch of the imagination. Much as I wish they were, even if what I like and what is good didn't match, I could at least understand, well, it's at least good stuff. But when I see stuff that's really good not catching on, or them having to force characters into a series just so they can make it viable, it's unfortunate, but that's kind of the way it is. I also found it interesting that after we get that splash page of Iron Man flying into space and stuff, we get a two-page splash of the Guardians showing up. And what got me there is, I mean, I'll grant, you know, Rocket Raccoon's little, you know, space suit or whatever is a little bit of a different look, because normally he's not out in space when we see him. But the look for Gamora, and certainly for Star-Lord, the costumes and the outfits were very different than we've seen before. Not good, not bad, just different. And again, the splash here seemed to be another, well, let's get something that we can sell on the original art market. And maybe I'm just getting a little, jaded with that kind of stuff. You know, it was an effective splash. It at least fit the story and stuff, but so soon after we'd gotten a full splash on Iron Man, you know, we got about a 20 pages or so, I didn't count the pages, of story, and three of them are used just right there, you know, with minimal story progression on those pages. So not exactly the tightest storytelling there that we could get.
Yeah, I was taking the Gamora costume, although she had a different... She didn't have this costume on the last page of Nova number one, did she?
Nope.
I was thinking more like maybe this is her space pressure suit or something that she can, you know, go and do something outside the ship in space or something.
And it makes sense that it tints her skin a more natural color than the green it usually is.
Colorist. Yeah, it is flesh colored there in that big splash page. The colorist didn't pay too close attention. Maybe it's refraction of the...
You can explain it away with whatever no prize submission you want. But
what's funny, because whenever she has the helmet on with like the glass down, it looks that color. But when she takes the helmet off, she's back to having the green skin.
What got me with Star-Lord's outfit is it almost looked like a Nighthawk kind of outfit. The helmet's got almost a bird motif to it. Like you could slide it down and the black stuff could go over the eyes like a bird mask kind of thing. There were some interesting, you know, art aspects. The one thing that really got me was the end of the story, page or two before the actual end. I don't want to say what happens. It seemed to be a plot point that we got to a lot faster than I would have expected. And they seemed to be setting something up, foreshadowing something that, you know, longtime readers of this group of Guardians of the Galaxy, frankly, have seen before. And so it's not like it's a new establishing thing or, you know, whatever, but it just seemed like, wow, I'm surprised they went there that fast. And to me, that's almost a sign of how long do they think this book is realistically going to last. Of course, the other sign of that was on the last page before the back cover and stuff, which would have been normally like a letters page or whatever, and we get the cover gallery. How many covers did they need to put on this? 16? Really? Come on.
That seems to be pretty light, I thought. Some of the books that they've been putting out lately.
Some of them are cool-looking covers, don't get me wrong, but that seems to be another way to shore up the sales of the first issue.
Yeah.
And I'd much rather see things get by on, wow, this was such a great story, I can't wait for the next issue. And I thought it was a good story. I thought they told some fun stuff. I think it set up the notion of the Guardians of the Galaxy. It didn't really set up most of the characters, unless you're kind of familiar with them already. But, I mean, these days, expecting that to happen in a first issue is kind of foolish. That's really what the opening story arc is for. And for the opening of the opening story arc, this was pretty good.
I really enjoyed the issue. Iron Man, I'm sort of indifferent to him being on the team. If, you know, he's going to keep the book from getting canceled after 10 or 12 issues, okay. I'll accept that he has to be in there. I think he's sort of out of place in the book. And I like Marvel Cosmic, and I like the book in general. I like the addition of the Spartax Empire to the, you know, Marvel Cosmic mythology, giving us kind of a reason. I want to see where Bendis goes with that. You know, Earth is off limits, and, you know, how much there's some manipulation going on there.
I'm definitely curious where they go, but I mean, every time I see Iron Man in this armor, particularly with the chest design where it looks like a star thing.
It's hideous.
I'm picturing the word star and the word armor, and I'm thinking, it's Starmer. That's his new name. No, it's bad. There were a couple of things here that I liked. There are a couple of things, it's like, really? I don't know. We'll see where they go. You know, if this makes it to issue 20 or something, frankly, I'll be a little surprised. I won't be disappointed, because I think it deserves a chance to get out there and get seen, but I think any non-Earthbound book these days at Marvel is questionable how long it'll last. So for me, it was a 4 out of 5.
Yeah, I give it a 4 out of 5 also, and I'll be very interested to see how the book progresses and who the fill-in artists are going to be.
You think McNiven's already going to need them, do you?
Well,
I'm not disagreeing. I just surprised you went there that fast.
Has he been able to do a monthly book since he left CrossGen?
Do you mean in consecutive months?
In consecutive months.
Oh, wow. That's just ridiculous. Bob, what are you thinking? This is McNiven. You get not the quality, not the speed. Anybody could hack it out really fast, but you get McNiven here.
They'll keep it on track, but I mean, they're going to pull some. And I guess the other question is how many issues are we going to get before we have the fill-in artist? Is McNiven going to actually, you know, has he already done, you know, 5 of the first 6 issues or something, you know, which would maybe give us a chance of getting him on all 6 issues of the first story arc? Or, you know, I'm just curious as to when the fill-in artists are going to start and who they'll be.
All kidding aside, that's a very fair question. And I've got to wonder if this was originally slated to come out between the Iron Man volumes or launch at that point, but they decided maybe to give McNiven a little more time to get a couple of more issues in the can. Whether that's the case or not, we'll find out by how quickly it ships and, you know, like you said, how quickly they've got a fill-in artist.
Yeah. I mean, if they did do that, I mean, I would say that it's smart because having more issues in the can so that we can get more consecutive issues out on time, that's a smart thing.
Yeah.
And I noticed, you know, the latest issue of Thor, it just seemed like a fill-in issue in issue number 6 to give, Asad, who's the painted art on Thor?
Asad Rubik?
Rubik, is that who it is?
I don't have it in front of me, so I can't tell you off the top of my head.
But, you know, he's the painted art, and like that last issue, it was like very different, and it was kind of like a flashback to Gore, the God Butcher, his origin.
Yeah, it was interesting, but it was definitely an aside.
You know, it just felt like, okay, you know, hit the pause button, now we're going to show you this, it's by a different artist, and that's going to give, you know, hopefully the regular artists there a chance to catch up and get the rest of the main story complete. Mm-hmm. I mean, it felt like it was an addendum to the story as opposed to something that would kind of drop in at the point that it did.
Yeah. It's we need a fill-in. Let's at least make it timely and fit the storyline. But it was something that didn't feel like it was originally slated to be there.
Right.
And I'd have to go check the solicits and stuff to see if that really is the case or if they caught it that far back.
But, I mean, I'm still enjoying that one. But that's the main thing with Marvel now that I notice is that they tend to have a general lack of consistency on art, with some exceptions. Like I was saying before, I mean, I think they do a really good job on rotating the artists on Daredevil.
Mm-hmm.
And the Thor one, while I didn't dislike the art, it was noticeably incongruent with the other art that's been on the series.
But it wasn't as bad as those 2 issues of, what was it, FF or Fantastic Four that had you drop the book.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, let's. Do you want to move to our indie book, Green Hornet by Mark Waid?
Yeah. Now, I've been reading all the Green Hornet titles that Dynamite's been doing, except the one that's kind of that classic reprint title. And they really flooded the market with too many titles set in too many different kind of narrative universes. And some stories were classic Green Hornet period pieces, like this kind of is. Some were set in a universe based on the never-produced Kevin Smith movie script. Some were set in the near future with a new futuristic almost Green Hornet. In some, Kato was Japanese, and some he was Chinese, and some it didn't really matter. Some he was young, some he was old. All in all, it frankly got a little confusing, and particularly with some of the delays on some of those titles, and I think it hurt the strength of the franchise. They're pretty much, if not entirely, down to just this one title, and this could be the stabilizing force or the shot in the arm that the property really needs to keep it kind of viable over at Dynamite. I thought this was a very solid issue with a lot of story in it, and while it sets up the series, I thought it also read really well as a single issue, and I liked, for the most part, Wade's take on the Green Hornet is kind of the long con, where he's infiltrating the Chicago underworld, learning about them, and then leveraging what he learns at the newspaper and kind of, you know, putting him away that way. And of course, nobody's going to get wise to how that's working because, I mean, they can follow what's going on in the Daily Sentinel easy enough. It's a newspaper. Everyone can follow that. But it's not like people are following the actions of the Green Hornet that closely because, I mean, nobody really kind of knows what he's doing except those he's just about to put away in jail and whatnot. So I thought there was some very interesting things here, but there were also one or two that had me... That you know how I am. I read this stuff, I then stop and think about it. And on the opening page, where, you know, we're getting the voiceover narration, which to me seems to be told from an older Britt Reed's perspective, who's mentioning, you know, 24/7 news channels, smartphones, the internet, things of you know, a modern reader can relate to. And then we get back, you know, flip the page, and we see him at the Daily Sentinel in what appears to be, you know, 1941. And I'm like, just how old did Britt Reed get before telling this story to, you know, kind of whomever he's telling it to? That part just kind of, you know, niggled at me a little. But I will say when they did a quick recap of the origin stuff, the allusion to the Lone Ranger and stuff, I thought was a nice touch to put in there. Because that's something that's kind of always been hinted at, but never flat out necessarily stated, just for legal reasons, I think. But I thought this was a good first issue. I am just uncertain if it's a first issue of a limited series where Wade's got a real clear end game for this, or if it's an ongoing and he's just going to run as long as he can on this book. So what were your thoughts?
I have not read all of the Green Lantern series like you have. Green Hornet series like you have. I have tried almost every one of the Green Hornet series, and I have given up on them after a couple of issues or even one issue. I just haven't liked a lot of the takes. I really enjoyed this one, though. Mark Waid might actually break through my not being able to stick with the Green Hornet series wall. Like you, I really liked the origin recap. I liked the, you know, Dan Reed thing. Although even there, they're not explicitly stating, you know, that it's the Lone Ranger, although it's pretty clear. And this goes back to the 70s. I think Philip Jose Farmer did a genealogy of different heroes and drew that, that similarity there. And I like the fact that they even talk about the silver mine, and they add the silver mine as a key thing that's, you know, part of the Reed family, and that's, of course, the silver mine that the Lone Ranger gets the silver for his bullets from.
Mm-hmm. I thought that was a nice touch.
Yeah. No, I really liked this issue. I liked the mixture of characterization and action. I liked the fact that Wade had all the setup and information in this issue that was necessary for someone to pick this up and just understand. I mean, it was a good first issue, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
It had everything right here in these pages, even if you've never read a Green Hornet story before in your life, to pick up and really not only get kind of the background and origin in a very nice capsule summary of the character, but, you know, you get introduced to his civilian life, you get introduced to the cast of characters, you get some action scenes, you get, you know, and we carry through like one piece, and we get even a satisfying conclusion to
exactly
the little story piece with the governor. You know, it's just like everything that I like to see in a first issue was here, which is no less than I would expect from Mark Waid. Because he is a very talented writer, and I mean, he knows this stuff. He knows how to make a story that's got the, you know, the value and the payoff, the, you know, feeling right there in the story. But this is going. I didn't have this on my list except for the first issue because, you know, I hadn't stuck with any Green Hornet series before. But absolutely, this is going on my pull. As long as Mark Waid's writing it, I'll be getting it.
Well, and this is one that as soon as he's off, I would expect this volume to end. While the title inside is The Green Hornet, not Mark Waid's Green Hornet, that is how they're pitching it in the solicits.
Right.
Of course, it's also interesting they refer to this as The Green Hornet Volume 1, which I'm pretty sure Dynamite's done a few already.
Yeah.
But, you know, hey, who's counting? clearly not them.
Well, you are. We can probably figure out how many things are. Maybe they've been called Green Hornet, not the Green Hornet.
That's possible. I don't think that's the case, but it's certainly possible. Again, I liked how this had the payoff at the end, and then a kind of an epilogue scene of, and next time we're going to, you know, kind of a something to pull you into the next thing. It was a really good balance of kind of giving a sense of completeness and some closure to the first issue, but not finality and no reason to come to the next, if you know what I mean. There's a clear reason to keep coming with this, this title. So again, Mark Waid, like you said, what do you expect? This he's a really good writer. And I'm happy to see him on this. And I think the property is sorely in need of his talents, given how overexposed and how diluted, Dynamite made the character over the last couple of years.
Yeah, that is true. I mean, that's hopefully if this takes off and is highly regarded, which it really should be. And, you know, that's one thing is, you know, if other people were burned out on Green Hornet, like I was when Dynamite kind of strip mined the character a couple of years ago, you know, maybe give this one a try, even though you were burned out before, because this is a really good, you know, this was a really good issue and it stands alone. And I hope that if this has some success, Dynamite doesn't just go straight back to, you know, cranking out 5 Green Hornet series again, because that just, it's not a good idea. You know, it's
they
just like,
have to be learning their lesson on that sooner or later.
Yeah. Tell one good Green Hornet book. You know, they've got so many different properties. Just tell one good one from each piece of the each character that they've got. Have a good Lone Ranger book. Have a good Zorro book. Have a good Green Hornet book. Flash Gordon. I mean, they've got a lot of characters that they publish. They don't need to overexpose them.
Well, the John Carter Warlord of Mars stuff, when they got to 3 or 4 of them, that's when I bowed out.
Yeah.
Now, with Green Hornet, I could see doing a Green Hornet and then a Kato book, maybe, but no further than that. And think about it. If they had done a Green Hornet monthly, a Lone Ranger monthly on offset by 2 weeks, with a Zorro one in there, you know, and then something else to round out kind of the 4-week cycle or whatever. They could have basically the same almost pulp kind of characters or whatever, the same audience having something good to come back to every week. That would get people in the rhythm of getting the comics, of enjoying something from them every week and stuff like that. It would be very beneficial, I think, and give them kind of a, I don't say a franchise, but a pseudo franchise, if you will. And that would be much better than, let's do 2 Zorro books, 5 Green Hornet books, 3, you know, Lone Ranger books, and, you know, whatever. But maybe the math just doesn't work out that way on the licensing, at which point, do different deals on the licensing. Because it does nobody any good to strip mine the characters the way they have been.
Yeah, I agree.
So, for me, a very strong 4 out of 5.
I am going to go with that same rating. I would love to give it a 5 out of 5, but it just, little bit shy of that. On the writing side, certainly. I mean, the art was very good, but it just didn't hit that 5 out of 5 for me.
I can see that. I can see that. I got to still say, though, on the writing side, I was surprised by the mention of the smartphones and stuff like that. You figure Britt Reed was 30 in 1941. That would put him how old by the age of the smartphone? I don't think Mark Waid did the math on that one. But c'est la vie.
Yeah, I kind of just went right by that one and didn't notice it.
So what else did you read this week?
A lot of stuff from my, I pretty much cleared out my to-be-read pile, but I only opened my DCBS box about an hour and a half before we recorded this episode, so I was out of town. So the only other book I read out of this was The East of West by Hickman and Dragota.
Mm-hmm. What'd you think of it?
I liked it. It's kind of like got some of the standard Hickman things, you know, with the interstitial blank pages, you know, with logos on it. I thought it's going to take me a couple of more issues of this one, I think, before I form a strong feeling for where he's going with the story. It seems like it go some different directions, but it seemed like it's 4 Horsemen of the Apocalypse meet, you know, and meet something, and I wasn't quite able to put my finger on it exactly, because we had several different time periods, and it's an alternate history, and, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah, I got it. I pre-ordered the first and not the others, and I'm okay with that decision. Didn't hate it or anything, but didn't really feel the need to come back. And I think what it comes down to is I like Hickman's work on some of the more mainstream superhero stuff. When he really kind of goes off in his own direction and stuff, it really comes down to how much the premise clicks with me. Mm-hmm. Some of it has, some of it has definitely not. And this was veering much more in the not category. And that's just, it's not for me, not that it's not any good. And I'm cool with that.
Right.
Read a couple other things. I'm liking what they're doing with the Legend of Oz, the Wicked West stuff. We're getting a couple of new characters and stuff in there. Big Dog Inc. is continuing to tell some good comics. Got the second issue of Five Weapons from Image. That actually kind of sped up some of the storyline aspect a bit more than I was expecting. There was also one line of dialogue I really wish had been changed just a little. And that was when the character introduces himself to somebody else of, you know, my name is. He really should have said, they call me blah, you know. Nitpick, definite nitpick. It's still a very fun miniseries. Looking forward to seeing where it goes. Star Trek number 19, we get some backstory on Scotty in the reboot universe. Fun stuff. Really continuing to love what they're doing in the Star Trek series. I think IDW really knows how to handle some of their licensed properties really well. And then the other one I want to talk about for just a sec is Morning Glory is number 25. I read this, and I've had this feeling once in a while, not once in a while, I've had it a lot sometimes, but not so much recently, where I'm reading this title, and I know that they're revealing a lot, I know a lot of important things are happening, but for the life of me, I'm just not quite getting it. This is a series that at some point I really do need to reread to fully appreciate. I think this was a revelatory issue, but I'll be honest, a lot of it I think was just kind of lost on me. Some of the characters look just enough alike, I read just enough comics that it's hard for me to instantly remember all the little tidbits of all the stories I'm reading and stuff. So I don't think it's a fault of the series, so much a reflection of my sometimes poor recollection. Definitely not a jumping on issue, that's for sure. But it was fun, it was good, a lot seemed to happen there, and I think it was a much larger issue than normal. So, curious what you think of it when you have a chance to read it.
Yeah, I just read issue 24 the other day, and that one, it was one of these, and I don't know what's in the current issue, but the last issue had focus on one of the kids. You know, so there was a lot of background insight. And some of those issues are a little easier to, you know, comprehend. You're getting the story of this one character. And, you know, when they get into the current day and all kinds of weird stuff is going on, I agree with you. It's kind of hard to keep some of that stuff in your head month to month if you're reading a lot of other stuff. I think this is a series that would definitely benefit from reading in chunks.
Well, and I think part of it is it's a deep story and it's a wide story. It's a very epic story. And I'm enjoying it for those reasons, but I'm also getting a little lost for some of those same reasons.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Anything else? Or does that pretty much do it?
That does it for me.
Cool.
Join us next week when we discuss Ferris number 14 from DC Vertigo, Thanos Rising number 1 from Marvel, and Harbinger Wars number 1 from Valiant.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.